healthcare should be unbelievably cheap, right? It's a capital intensive, almost zero marginal cost business. And if you look at any other industry, that is a terrible business model.
I'm Camille Foster for Reason TV, and I'm here with David Goldhill, the CEO of the Game Show Network. Mr. Goldhill is also the author of a much-discussed Atlantic article from 2009, How American Healthcare Killed My Father. That article has now become a book called Catastrophic Care, and Mr. Goldhill has been generous enough to join us to discuss some of the ideas in that book and his unique take on what is wrong with America's healthcare system. Mr. Goldhill, thanks so much for joining us. David,
thanks so much for joining us.
I wanted to begin by asking you to give us a little bit of context about how you got interested in the issue and your sort of unique perspective on it and how your experience with your father sort of brought you there.
Well, specifically, my dad walked into a hospital one afternoon with a bit of shortness of breath. He was admitted for observation. The fear with a man his age, he was 82 at the time, is always pneumonia. But within 24 hours had acquired what became a series of infections in that hospital that killed him 5 weeks later without his leaving. I probably would have been like any other family member then, just dealing with the grief and the sort of disbelief. Except coincidentally, there was a piece in the New Yorker a month later about a guy who'd been running around the country, Peter Pronovost, an expert in healthcare safety, with a series of fairly simple steps, a protocol for cleanliness and hygiene, that in hospitals that had tried it had reduced this type of infection rate by 2/3 to 3/4. And it was almost costless. It was just a really a matter of procedures and discipline and oversight. And it had a hard time getting hospitals to sign up for this. That's also where I learned a statistic that more Americans should know, which is that roughly 100,000 Americans are estimated to die from preventable infections received in hospitals. And the numbers for total medical error-related death for all causes are up near 200,000, which makes this one of the leading causes of death in the country. Strangely enough, as a businessman who had just been through a personal tragedy, that set off an alarm bell. Because I'd helped run a movie theater chain. And in our movie theater chain, we had a simple rule. If a soda spilled, someone had to clean it up in 5 minutes or someone got in trouble. And it wasn't because we were afraid of liability. It's because we were afraid that you and your wife would be there on date night and finally have gotten a babysitter for the kids. And the first thing you see when you walk into our movie theaters is a soda spill. Yeah. And I thought to myself, if we can do that to get you not to go to the theater across the street, why on earth are hospitals having such a hard time doing what seems like fairly simple cost-free things to save lives? And that, Camille, is what got me interested in this whole question of what's really going on in our healthcare system.
Yeah, and from reading your book, I mean, the word incentives comes up a great deal. It sounds as though there is a direct correlation or connection, I should say, between the way that we are financing healthcare in this country and the fact that we are not taking those simple steps to try to alleviate what is a really profound problem. You contextualize that by saying that an elderly person is more likely to die going to the hospital for treatment than a soldier in Iraq or Afghanistan,
And obviously there's no disrespect intended for the extraordinary danger our young men and women go into in war. It's just to make the point that even the most dangerous sacrifice we can ask a citizen to make has a better mortality, a lesser mortality rate, I should say, than a senior going into a hospital, which is appalling. The fundamental argument I make is whether removing us as the real consumer in healthcare, putting someone in between us and providers, whether it's insurers, whether it's Medicare, whether it's Medicaid, has so completely turned the incentives in the system on their head, so that what we see now is that the best way to make money in healthcare is to price high, provide excess service, be sloppy about safety, underinvest in service, which includes information technology, and lack the type of accountability we see in everything else, that the incentives actually point everyone's behavior in the wrong direction. And that what you see in healthcare is this struggle between sort of professional responsibility and a desire to do good, which I think most people have, and their economic incentives, which push everyone, unfortunately, in the other direction.
How did insurance, healthcare, and health all sort of become synonymous with one another?
That may be the single most dangerous element of our healthcare debate. The things that drive health, which we know, are all lifestyle. They're nutrition, they're exercise, their stress, income, education, public safety, all these things drive health results far more than health care. And so that big thing that we do in healthcare policy that's most dangerous is we imply that making sure everybody has the maximum amount of healthcare is essential for health, when one could better argue that diverting 18% of our GDP into healthcare has made us significantly less healthy as a country. I always like to turn that little thing on its head and say, you know what's amazing is that no developed country's health seems to suffer no matter how little it spends on healthcare. It may be the least important factor in health, and yet it's the one we emphasize. From there, a lot of things go wrong, right? From there, we have a system where much of the debate is about money. How do we pay for all the healthcare people need? And unfortunately, when we get into that discussion, we miss a big question, which is if we pay for healthcare in such a way that we take the individual out, are we going to subject people to excess care and excess treatment, which is a major cost, a major cause of harm and injury and poor health in itself?
Sure.
Are we going to subject people to sloppy treatment with all the risk of error and up to death that we see? And are we going to subject people to unaccountable treatment where the latest innovations, the latest benefits don't work their way in the system the way they do in everything else?
And there seems to be a real desire on the part of many Americans to not think about their healthcare costs, to not think about paying for healthcare or buying it, to work for an employer who pays for healthcare on their behalf. How does that factor into the incentives that we sort of see playing out in the system?
Well, it factors in crucially because, the foundation of healthcare economics in this country is an article written by Kenneth Arrow. And Kenneth Arrow said, healthcare can never be a normal industry because you'll buy whatever your doctor sells you. He's got all the expertise,
right.
You're desperate, you're sick, he's going to tell you how not to be sick, he maybe even save your life. You'll buy anything. There can't be any normal marketplace transaction.
Sure.
So what's happened? So now we never ask him what it costs, and we buy everything.
Yeah.
In fact, it's almost what I would call Arrow's revenge, although I don't think he would regard that very kindly. But fixing the system has made that thing worse.
Yeah.
We are less skeptical, more open. There's a terrific website that every American should look at called the NNT.com. Every American should look at before taking a pill or having a treatment. The NNT takes all the numbers that you see that are almost always misleading about healthcare and translates it into a single number. How many people need to take this pill for one person to benefit? How many people need to have this operation for one? This is one person who's been prescribed this operation.
Sure.
Right? It's astonishing. We have many pills that look, I'm taking a statin for cholesterol. If you look at the NNT, and admittedly I'm not, I'm contradicting my own point, it's a few people benefit for every 100 who take it. And roughly the same number are hurt because of other risks that come from taking this pill. Healthcare should be unbelievably cheap, right? It's a capital intensive, almost zero marginal cost business. And if you look at any other industry, that is a terrible business model. It's funny, the other day I was at a speech that a politician made in which he said he'd figured out a way that if we can integrate care, we can reduce the number of MRIs performed and that'll bring costs down. And he and I were sitting next to each other afterwards. I said, that doesn't bring costs down. He said, what do you mean? I said, the marginal cost of doing an MRI is zero. You already have the machine, you already have the technician. Right. What you're confusing is price and cost. In healthcare, we never talk about prices. We like to believe that somehow there's some force that actually determines what something costs, that it's independent of economics. And that has been devastating to prices in healthcare. There was a terrific piece in the New York Times this week about asthma drugs. And way into the story, towards the back, the reporter who's done a terrific job on looking at high prices in healthcare, and she recognized these are prices, not costs, said, the one thing the asthma drug companies are determined to do is to avoid their drugs ever being sold over the counter. They want them sold on prescription. Keep the prices up. Not the costs up.
Yeah.
The prices up.
Yeah. And preventive care has also been sort of a fundamental building block for folks who talk about controlling costs. If we do more preventive care, that will actually bring down costs over time. What's your take on that? Is there much there?
Well, there is no there. We know that most preventive care is useless, thank goodness, right? Most of us are healthy. And I think there's you know, the politics of healthcare are very interesting. It's almost a combination of the incredibly naive and the extraordinarily self-interested becoming a coalition to do anything we can to push up demand. Preventative care is really interesting because it's an example, I think, of where the Affordable Care Act confused cost, price, and visible cost. So preventative care was developing as a very competitive segment because under most people's high deductible plans, they were paying for most of their preventative care. So you saw minute clinics growing all over the country, clinics in drugstores and in Walmarts and what have you. And the reality is the cost of performing most tests is almost zero. And there's a lot of technologies out there that will bring it down very close to zero and, more importantly, let you do it at home. Why? Well, they had a chance to succeed because you were paying for it. The administration, or at least the supporters of the Affordable Care Act, to be fair, think preventative care should be free to make sure nobody, nowhere, doesn't get any total amount of it, doesn't get the total amount of it.
Right.
Well, the problem with that is all that incentive to price preventative care cheaply went out the window. The minute you said anybody who's insured should never have to pay a penny for preventative care, the incentive to keep prices down was gone. And I think it's actually an interesting example of what's happened in all of healthcare. Look at Medicare. In 1965, the average senior spent 10% of his or her income on healthcare, and they were paying for all of it. Mm-hmm. So we fast forward almost 50 years of Medicare. The average senior pays only 5% of their total healthcare bill. 95% is paid through Medicare. Mm-hmm. Right? That 5% is now almost 20% of their income. They're no better off financially. The extremes are less. Fewer people have extreme examples. But all you've done is you've enabled my disguise, my not knowing what something cost me, my crazy belief that someone else is really paying for it.
Right.
To allow the providers to push up prices.
Well, what any number of people watching now might think to themselves is, well, that's because of all the technology in healthcare. Technology is driving up the cost of healthcare, but you have a different take on that as well.
I once did a Google search to see how many articles had been written in the previous year saying that technology had driven up healthcare. And then I tried to imagine how many of those articles were written on $400 laptops.
Sure.
You know, it's an obvious confusion for people.
Yeah.
Technology does drive up the cost of anything if you allow it to. So if we said, you know, everybody should have a smartphone, but we know smartphones are expensive. So anything above $300, the government will pay for. Well, your smartphone would be nuclear powered, right? It would have a can opener on it. It would do everything you can imagine. And technology will have driven up those costs in people's minds. The issue in healthcare is different. The issue is, do we have incentives for those technologies that bring down costs and prices, which is most technology, including most healthcare technology, to be adopted by sellers, providers? We don't. Do we have incentives for technology that seems to push up prices and costs to be adopted by providers? Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the difference, and that's what people miss. The Reagan era reform to bundle hospital payments had an enormous impact on hospital use in this country. Most people aren't aware of this, but the average stay per Medicare beneficiary in hospital, number of days, has declined by 60% since then. Inpatient care is totally transformed. Most of it is short. What did the hospitals do in response? Did they cut their prices because demand declined by 60%? No. They invested in things that pushed up their costs. So hospitals now say to Medicare, our costs are 7x what they were 30 years ago. And the prices you pay us are now 5x. That's not what other industries would have done. Now, if you go into a typical hospital, you see less information technology than you do at your Jiffy Lube. It's not because Congress pushed Jiffy Lube to adopt information technology. It's because they want to save money. Hospitals never had an incentive to save money.
Right.
They have the opposite incentive. And that's why technology seems to be pushing up price. The Army's got a blood clotting technology. It's a topical that no hospital in America uses. Why? It's too cheap.
Let's turn our attention to the Affordable Care Act for a moment. Obviously, there are a great many policies there, some of which we've sort of discussed already. What's sort of the best and worst attribute of the Affordable Care Act?
Well, I actually think the best attribute of the Affordable Care Act is the basing of Medicaid on income levels. I think one of the great dysfunctions of the Medicaid program is that it had become sort of the favored disease or condition program, as opposed to what it needs to be, which is a safety net for those Americans who can't afford health care. I don't like the way Medicaid functions, but I think the idea of saying, look, this is about helping people who can't afford health care, period, is a real positive. If we're going to have a safety net structured the way it's structured, it needs to be structured more simply. Unfortunately, the rest of the Affordable Care Act is the opposite of simple. It takes a system that's already way too complex, way too hard for people to understand and navigate through, just normal consumers just to navigate through, and makes it ever more complicated. So the greatest issue in that, apart from it's making it harder for us to be patients and consumers of healthcare, is that we don't really know what's going to happen, and neither do its sponsors. I don't think there's a lot of genuine market incentives in the Affordable Care Act. I think the people who wrote it think there are. I think most of them are so constricted, it's so narrow, and so manipulated, I think the exchanges are a good example of this, that we're as likely to see them depress competition and all the benefits competition bring as enable competition. You know, the Affordable Care Act, although it tried to do a lot of different things in healthcare, was most interested in insurance, expanding the amount of insurance coverage, both the number of people covered and the type of coverage itself. There are obviously positives in that. Unfortunately, you know, the American system of insurance, both public and private, is unique in that it has no break. The principle here is that any care that's needed should be paid for by your private insurer, by your public insurer through Medicare or Medicaid. Sure. That is a principle no other country on earth embraces.
Sure. Yeah, well, I mean, you certainly don't see that in places where there is single-payer insurance policies. I mean, they have to stop it.
Somebody
some point.
Somewhere gets to say no.
Sure.
In the American system, and I, by the way, I don't think this is fixable, so I think you have to, it's one of the reasons that I think you have to have a greater role for consumer, because in the United States, the consumer is the only one that has recognized authority to say no.
Sure.
You know, if you look at what's happened with Medicare, arguably Medicare has unleashed this plague of medical sloppiness and errors and excess care and the medicalization, all these terrible things. There's not a senior citizens political organization out there that says, please, will somebody administer this program to protect us from healthcare?
Sure, sure.
Not a single one.
Yeah. And I guess when you approach healthcare, you are a Democrat. But when you approach healthcare, your first instinct at this point is not single payer. It is a market-oriented solution where folks are more responsible for more of their own healthcare. Can you describe what a system that works looks like?
What I would like to see is a straightforward, simple, truly universal safety net, which for me means that you insure against what insurance can actually do well without distorting the market, which is catastrophic care. But we can manage that part of it that really isn't expected or predictable. And as a part of that, we can create a system that's truly universal and look at those who can't afford to be in the system and actually give them the money to participate. Beyond that, we really do need to unleash in healthcare those forces that work in everything else. Competition, incentives for innovation, incentives for value, need to satisfy a customer, need to be accountable to a customer. And the only way to do that is to take some of the $3 trillion we're going to spend on healthcare, give it back to the places it came from, because it was not magically invented. We're all paying into this system.
Sure.
Give it back to the individuals. Carve out as a safety net for all that which is truly unpredictable. And frankly, over time, we have to have the discipline to reduce that safety net, to make it more about what's catastrophic. Look, end-of-life care is the ultimate example of this. End-of-life care is very expensive. And as we all know, many hospitals are incented to do a tremendous amount of it regardless of what the patient wants. I saw that with my own father. And I think any of us who have older parents dread that very difficult time where it feels like they're being tortured by their therapeutic institution. And fortunately, we live in a world where most of us are likely now to have end-of-life care. We're going to live long enough and be safe enough and all those great things about living today. But you can't insure for it. You can't insure for something that's going to happen to everybody.
Yeah, that is the wrong model.
It's the wrong model. Okay. And worse, when you insure for it, it means everyone demands too much of it. And if we all need it, which is what healthcare people talk about need, then how does it work? How do you have a fire insurance pool if everybody's house is going to burn down? You can't.
Sure.
And that's the fundamental problem with thinking about healthcare, is that we've taken it from where insurance made a ton of sense, protecting us against the unexpected, the financially ruinous, the very long-term health problem, and making it comprehensive, so that it's a failing of your healthcare plan, of your healthcare insurance, if it doesn't fund the equivalent of your oil change and you're filling up the tank with gas.
Sure.
We don't ask auto insurance to do it. We can't ask health insurance to do it without so distorting the healthcare economy we get what we have today.
Now, there could be someone listening to the conversation who's thinking to themselves, well, you know, I have two children. At some point, he needs his appendix removed or his tonsils removed. This is going to cost us $10,000 or $15,000
at
a single pop.
That's right.
Or I have been in a car accident, very, very difficult, or a loved one has. The notion of thinking about cost in a circumstance like that is just anathema to them. What would you say to someone who raises a challenge like that?
Well, I the book begins with the story of what a person starting work at my company today will pour into the healthcare system over her lifetime. So I look at a 23-year-old starting out on our classic PPO plan, the sort of big insurance plan with a low deductible, the old standard plan. I look at how much she'll pay in taxes, how much her wages will decrease because we're paying her premiums, where else does the money come from, how much she'll pay out of pocket. And it's extraordinary. So this young woman, if she's the sole breadwinner for her family, and the cost of healthcare goes up by zero over her lifetime, which, by the way, probably hasn't been true just during our own conversation here, you know, she's looking at putting $1 million to it.
Sure.
If she just puts in what the Affordable Care Act estimates are for cost growth over the next 10 years, she'll put $1.7 million in. If she's got a working spouse, they'll together put $2.25 million in. Now, here's the punchline. They're not rich. I have her as just a normal middle-class family, entry-level salary, doing what people have done in this country forever. She will wind up putting in somewhere between 30 and 35% of her family income into healthcare. Now, she's not going to notice it, right? Because a lot of it's going to be taxes, and some of it will be premiums we pay, and it'll be spread out over so many different things. But how many Americans don't think they can handle their family healthcare on some of that too? At $250,000. And the difference, of course, is if it was our $2.25 million,
yeah,
that appendectomy is not going to cost 10 grand. Not going to be priced at 10 grand. Because you can't sell them there. I'm very attracted to what Singapore has done. You know, Singapore has a very large involvement for the government in healthcare. But it does one thing that no other developed country does, is it says at every point of purchase, the individual is the customer. And that effect is transformative. Not just on price, by the way,
mm-hmm,
but also on service and safety. I don't know if you know, but Singapore spends under 4% of GDP on healthcare,
wow,
making it by far the lowest in the developed world. And what's even more interesting is the average Singaporean, and this is a country roughly the same income per person in the United States, the average Singaporean is estimated to have enough in his health savings account after 20 years of the system to pay for 11 hospitalizations.
Wow.
It's amazing how quickly bringing the consumer in. Look, the device you're carrying, a mini tablet, would have been inconceivable in the day of mainframes when Medicare was created. It didn't happen because we said, let's make computers small. It would happen because somebody said, I want to chase this guy and get his business, not just the Defense Department and NASA's business.
Sure.
We need to do that in healthcare. We need more of it in healthcare.
Another area which you don't discuss in much detail in your book is the American Medical Association, which does in fact have a monopoly on minting new doctors, and that carries its own incentives.
Yes.
Do you have any thoughts on what sort of reforms might be appropriate there? I saw one study which suggested that medical doctors in the United States, both specialists and general practitioners, were being paid 2 to 3 times more what their OECD counterparts were being compensated.
Right.
That's adding something like $50 billion a year to the cost of care.
Is that
a concern?
Sure, it is a concern. But I think if you look at it more broadly, the fact that the government's role in healthcare is not just to help us pay for it, but actually to be the customer, both through Medicare and Medicaid, where it directly buys healthcare on the behalf of its beneficiaries, and in the way it structures insurance, where it comes pretty close to doing so as well, by restricting what insurers can and cannot buy. There's an enormous number of places where industrial interests have captured the regulatory regime.
Sure.
The very fact that we have general hospitals in areas where they can't perform operations in enough scale to be any good at it, is an example of it. You're right. The fact that most states restrict what other licensed professionals can do to only doctors pushes up their income.
Right.
But let me remind people of something that we've forgotten. There's 1 million doctors in this country. There's 15 million people earning their living in healthcare. So doctors are 6% of the healthcare workforce. Mm-hmm. Incentives matter everywhere. And there's no question that when you look at, I mean, for example, just to go back to yours, how does Medicare determine how much an orthopedic surgeon's time is worth versus a primary care physician's?
Sure.
They go to the doctors.
Yeah.
Arguably not the best place to ask somebody about relative value, right? I wish they'd do that in my industry. I got to tell you, I think Americans are frightfully undersupplied with game shows. And I'd like to see Congress and regulators intervene. It'd be better for their health.
I'm inclined to agree.
But yeah, I mean, it's obvious,
game shows,
right?
About healthcare.
It'll be the issue in the next election, I'm pretty sure. But, there's a lot of places where there's that intersection. And they're dangerous. Look at how our dialysis program works. Dialysis is the one single-payer part of the American healthcare system, where the government essentially pays for everything that any end-stage renal disease sufferer has. Look at the history of it. It's an extraordinary history of industry capture, and we see it everywhere. We are going to have to face something about our political system. It's extraordinarily responsive, right? That's why there's so much lobbying. Campaigns never end. Politicians spend all their time raising money. I once wrote that if we want our healthcare system to be like Sweden's, we can't adopt Sweden's healthcare system. We have to adopt their political system. Because the more power that we give the government to buy stuff, the more sense it makes for me to lobby the government to buy my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is what's happened in healthcare. As the government's now running $1.25 trillion economy as the direct customer,
mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money not to be influenced by lobbying.
Sure.
As we talked about earlier, the Affordable Care Act actually expands those opportunities, doesn't reduce it, which is one of the reasons,
right,
I'm concerned about how it will really work in practice.
So any good news on the horizon?
Well, I think there is.
Okay.
I actually think we see it with our own employees here. So the biggest problem with the development of markets and technological innovation that actually brought prices down instead of raised them and created therapeutic benefits instead of just cost base has been not enough scale of real consumers. Well, that's changing very fast. We now have a significant percentage of our workforce that really thinks about the price, the cost to them of actually buying healthcare. And we're starting to see new business models, we're starting to see new technologies take advantage of the fact that we have price-conscious consumers. This is an enormous benefit, and in fact, it may wind up being the biggest accidental result of the Affordable Care Act, is that it looks like to get subsidies on the exchanges, for companies to possibly offer insurance that's less than the Cadillac tax limits, we're going to see more and more cost sharing. On the island of healthcare, people are focused on, oh my God, does that mean somebody may not get healthcare they need? In the real economy, what we know is going to happen is that as you get a scale of consumers, a scale of cost value motivated consumers, you then have a reason for providers and for business models to seek them out. There's tons of technologies in healthcare that would save cost. There's tons of, you want to look at simple healthcare, go to a clinic that serves the undocumented, or go to a concierge practice that serves the rich. The undocumented and rich benefit from two things. They're both the only customer. There's no one behind them. They've both opted out, either voluntarily or involuntarily, of the insurance system. And what do we see there? Simple, straightforward, price-conscious care. We're going to see that in more of our economy, and it's going to create, people say all the time, where are the Bill Gates? Where are the Steve Jobs? Where are the FedExes? Where are the Walmarts? Well, there's never been enough scale and customer to build those business models. Mm-hmm. Models that emphasize value, true innovation, service and accountability. I think we're going to get to a point where enough people pay the first $2,000, $2,500, even $10,000 out of pocket, that suddenly those people, because there's a lot of people looking at it, the Steve Jobs of healthcare is coming. He's soon going to have a big enough market to actually build an innovative product and innovative service, and that's going to be great for healthcare.
David, thanks so much for your time. The book, again, is Catastrophic Care, How American Healthcare Killed My Father. It is a phenomenally well-written and accessible book. I commend it to you. Please go out and read it. For Reason TV, I'm Camille Foster. Thanks so much for joining us.